126. I am Julian Chef Bobby. We presenters, unfortunately, I just learned the number schedule for presenters to begin. I'll just get some more time to cut. Reminder to please silence your cell phones. If you have not already done so, and please keep in mind that we'll hold the questions until the end of the panel, so if you have things to say, then sit up your names for just a few minutes. This session is being recorded. You'll be able to purchase it at the end of today, I think. Or I think they go up for free on the social club. We can have
more microphones. Sorry, I'm just teaching, so I'm just used to talking really loud at people. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to some of magazine, which also covers obviously some of the symposium. And I've been asked to remind you, in case you've listed, there are a whole lot of book exhibits at Paul, and you should take a look at those for the kinds of books that you probably can't get anywhere else in this quantity of density. The section will be 60 minutes long, and we're asking everyone to work really hard at hearing, keeping within the time frame of the session so that we can keep everything running on time. And so, we're three presenters. I'm going to now introduce, I'm going to introduce you all at once and then have you run with it. That's one that works. On the far end for me, in the yellow, we have Brianna Buck, who is a male to female transgender woman living in Oregon, Utah. She has a deep and abiding interest in Mormon history and Mormon sociology. In the middle here, we have Lucas Kieran Strider, a non-binary trans person living in Salt Lake City. They enjoy creating electronic music, reading about queer theory, and playing Minecraft.
All excellent books.
They currently are conflicted in their feelings regarding the church and the rebels, and are hoping to find some spiritual clarity during their time in Utah. And here to my right, we have Melly Penfold. Okay, Melly or Curtis Penfold, a polyamorous, coffee loving, bisexual, gender fluid, androgen, and drag artist who resigned from the LDS Church in October of 2013. Melly writes for the blog Young Mormon Feminist and created the 7-part blog series for Ryan Leather called Finding the Queer Christ in Mormonism. So, presenters have the floor.
All right, so as you said, my name is Brandon Clark. As you also said, I'm male female, and technically I live in Provo now, but Provo and Orem are basically in the same place, let's be real. I guess I should just, by way of, kind of introducing myself, kind of telling my story. I was born in Oklahoma, moved to Utah in 2009 when my dad got accepted to BYU, and I've been here ever since. I came out publicly as trans almost 2 years ago now. I came out as trans in September 28th, 2013. The term inside the trans community, that's when I went full time, because coming out isn't exactly a, like, one step, you're suddenly trans, and everyone knows about it all the time. For most people, it's very much a, you tell some friends, you tell some family, maybe you go out as your true self to, like, parties or stuff for a while before you make the step of, like, transitioning in the workplace, and some people can't even do that, so I've been very fortunate that I've been able to transition fully and publicly. I have a name tag at my job that has my correct name and everything like that. So that's been since 2013, with a couple of years before that, we're actually coming out private to individuals and family members and things like that.
Hi, I'm Lucas Kieran Strider. A lot of people know me just as Kieran Strider if you've seen me on Facebook. I am agender. I don't know, I just feel like this blob of gender is void. So let's just put it that way. I came out officially in 2013, and it's a fun story. I was actually in psychiatry hospital for a really bipolar episode. I came out to my parents there. I mean, I've been out to a few partners, to some friends, to some you know, people on the internet, but I hadn't actually come out. And then I ended up moving to New Hampshire, relocated to San Francisco, where I started testosterone in December 2013. Back to Texas for a while, and now I'm here on testosterone again, and hopefully getting top surgery in the near future. So that's great. Like, and like Brianna said, it's like a lot of people don't have the ability to like transition like fully like in the workplace and everything. I've been pretty lucky. Like my job in San Antonio, my sister worked there before me, so she kind of had an in, and so like she just told, she introduced me to her manager as her brother, and so he was just like, okay, I can just question it. And then when I ended up, Mally actually helped me get a job here, so I've been pretty lucky to be able to like have a name on those Lucas name tags and stuff. So.
It's your fault that I'm like,
there's like a lot of slack on this mic, so I'm gonna like lean over the table like I'm telling you guys a story at a bar. So my name is, I go by Molly right now, and I think a lot of people know me before as Curtis Pemple, and so I am kind of slowly transitioning into that name and getting people used to it. When I got back from, so I feel like a lot of times our stories, we want them to start really young, but like when we're young, sometimes we don't really know the words that we don't really know what we think about ourselves or what we are in relationship to everybody else, and we don't know about other movements or other things going on. So really when I got back from my mission in 2012, I started getting involved in LGBTQ stuff, and I started getting involved in feminist things. And that really helped me start to notice that like I never really felt connected to the gender I was assigned, and it wasn't like I felt like I was the opposite gender either, and I just felt like this like disconnect, and I could like start to talk about it more. And when I started talking to other in the trans community, there's kind of sometimes we said a divide among trans community between what we call like binary trans people and non-binary trans people. And it can get more complicated than that, but like there's this idea that there's like the binary trans people are men or they're women, you know. They're trans because they are the opposite gender, the gender they were assigned at birth. But the non-binary trans community is more about like we might be agender, as Kieran described himself, or we might be androgynous or some other gender completely. We might be gender fluid and shift from one gender to another, or just have like a complicated relationship with our gender. You know, questioning is sometimes there's this like implication. I think that like questioning is like a temporary stage that like you're supposed to be questioning for a little bit and then know who you are. But for some people that is an identity in and of itself. Anyway, but learning about these like agender or non-binary genders really helps me feel a little bit more comfortable, and like I can accept and apply those concepts to me a lot, and because I've felt this kind of disconnect, and it helps me feel a little more like myself. It just helps me feel a little better, and so it's not necessarily for me. It's not necessarily about like a dysphoria that's, I mean, there is some dysphoria, but not like a strong dysphoria that it's a life or death situation, like it is for some people, which I convey that we need to respect that. But for me, it is more of I feel better this way, and that's why I publicly identify this way as an androgyn or as a femme person. And so, yeah.
Well, now open the floor to any questions you might have. So feel free to ask anything. Don't be afraid. If it is something that's like not something that you want to answer, we'll just let you know. But don't let that like dissuade you from asking a question, because I feel better if someone asks something and I say that's not an appropriate question than just someone to not ask a question they feel they would like to get answered. Just get upset. I mean, there are obviously some things that maybe you wouldn't want to ask, like, you know, things that don't really pertain to anything at all. I mean, my favorite color is yellow, but other than that, you know, feel free to ask questions. If it's inappropriate, we'll just let you know.
You're wearing yellow.
I am wearing yellow.
The microphone.
Wait, you
have to recording. My question is, although I defined myself from the age of 12 as homosexual, gay wasn't part of the vocabulary, and even homosexual was new. But I appreciate knowing the existence of non-binary trans, because that's not something that I was aware of. I thought it was more binary. And I have a question about surgical options. My suspicion is that for binary trans people, that's a very real option. But for those who are non-binary, is surgical transitioning even a part of your worldview?
It ultimately depends on the individual person. Like, I'm sorry, we're just jumping at this. No, because it's like, because I ended up by non-binary and I plan on getting top surgery. I don't plan on getting bottom surgery because the current state, phalloplasties have a very high rate of, like, a very low rate of, like, satisfaction for the patient,
yeah,
as opposed to, like, how, like, vaginoplasties and stuff are, like, a lot more successful. And so, like, there's people who never get surgery, there's people who get some surgery, there's people who don't start hormones, there's people who do start hormones. Like, it all depends on the individual person, and a lot of people will, like, try to, like, police you, being like, you're not really trans if you don't go, like, full transition. It's like, what really is a full transition? Like, for hormones, for one person, could be a full transition. Presenting as, you know, a different gender than when they were assigned at birth could be a full transition for another person. Like, you can't just, like, create this, you know, standard for, like, every trans person, because that's just not realistic to expect everyone to hear that. So, like, yeah, there are a lot of, like, non-binary people who will get surgery. I have a friend who got top surgery. I mean, he goes by masculine pronouns, but he doesn't identify as male fully. So,
you kind of covered everything I was going to say, but we shouldn't be trying to define exactly what a transition is. I mean, some people say that their transition began the moment that they admitted to them, the moment they came out to themselves. And so, when does a transition begin and when does it end is kind of a question up to the individual. And I think even it's important to recognize too that even binary trans people, some of them decide not to have even any medical gender assignment procedures, including hormones or surgeries. And that really is up to the person, the individual. And so we shouldn't really like push what we want a trans person to do onto everybody who identifies as trans.
I'd like to just thank you all for coming today, and I really appreciate the fact that the panel is here.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I'd like to give the context for my question. I'm a writer interested in portraying or representing trans people in a Mormon context, and within that light, what does dysphoria feel like, especially in relation to other frustrations of being represented, you know, according to your self-image society in a Mormon context? And second, how would you like to be represented in fiction? How can somebody like me, who's mostly straight, you know, pretty cis, how can I represent you guys respectfully?
So in response to your first question about dysphoria and how it feels, it can vary between people, especially with that there can also, of course, be varying amounts, even just between the general concept of binary trans people versus non-binary trans people, experience in very different ways. My personal experience is that there are multiple kinds of dysphoria. screwed up at some point, and now I have all these problems with it that I have to resolve them. So kind of what it feels like, I guess the closest way I've been able to describe it to someone is, it's when you look in the mirror, and you're about to look in the mirror and have this idea of what you should look like. You can see all your features, you have all these thoughts, and then I look in the mirror and the person that looks back at me is very different than what I expect and what I hope to see. And then there's, of course, the issue with, like, my voice. I work at a call center, which is ironic, because I actually really hate the sound of my own voice. For me, that's probably the biggest source of my, at least, like, bodily dysphoria, is the sound of my voice, because when I hear it, it doesn't sound how I imagine myself to be. It doesn't sound how I expect myself to sound as a woman. And then there's, of course, the social dysphoria, which is being perceived as others as something that you are not. So it could be, I could be completely resolved with body dysphoria. I could, like, well, personally, I'm not sure I would ever be completely resolved with body dysphoria, but I could do my best to reduce it as much as possible and feel very good about myself, but then I would still have severe issues if I were to, say, go to a gas station and have someone call me sir, for example. And with that, that's not quite the same feeling as a personal body dysphoria. It's a feeling of you're trying your best and identifying the way that you are, and then it's just very kind of a hurtful feeling to be seen as something that you're not. It's really hard to really put into context. It's really hard to describe in words exactly how it feels. It's kind of like you're being mistaken for someone else, and you try to tell them that they're mistaken. Obviously, you are who you are instead of this other person they think you are. And then instead of it just being a slightly awkward laughing off about it, that person tells you that you are wrong and that you have to get, like, you know, you have to go get psychiatric help or whatever to see that you are obviously the person they mistook you for. It's a very frustrating feeling. In regards to your second question about how you want to be represented as a trans Mormon in fiction, there's a million and a half ways to do that. Probably the best, my best kind of bumper sticker advice is make sure they have a personality. A lot of fiction that I have read revolving around trans people and trans bodies is exactly that. It revolves around their body. The person feels that they are trans. The main conflict in the story is their transition, which, of course, that is a very important part of someone's life, and it's very an extremely tumultuous time for a lot of trans people. The problem is that a lot of writers really get it wrong in terms of they focus so much on the transition they forget about the person's personality. I read this one book that's a fantastically bad example of this, of a woman who was a college professor and had all these interests and taught this amazing history of cinema class, and then she transitions and stays in her house all day to make bread. So basically, just don't assume that a trans person will immediately change all of their likes and interests and suddenly you'll fall for these extremely stereotyped gender roles. I mean, I enjoy making bread just as much as the next person, but I also have much the same personality as I had before my transition, and it's really important to remember that and to take into account the fact that it's not just some very linear, I am trans, I am Mormon, somehow I'm reconciled with this. In my experience, it was very much, I can't be trans because I'm Mormon, because what would that mean for me in the afterlife? If gender is eternal, then what would that mean for me? And then it became, I am trans because obviously I can't change that, but that means I can't be Mormon. But then it came right back around to what does that mean in the afterlife? And then it kind of goes in kind of stutters of, I can be trans and Mormon, but the First Presidency doesn't like that, so what does that mean for me? And it's just, basically it's a lot more questions than answers, and it's a very personal struggle for a lot of people. And so probably the best way for representing someone who's a trans Mormon in fiction is to talk about that and talk about their actual transition, but also focus on their life and their loved ones, because, you know, believe it or not, I'm a lot more than just my transition story. I'm a lot more than just my faith journey.
supportive question is a hard one because I often find that as like a multiply disabled, mentally ill trans person, everything just like gets into this lump where I can't pick things out very easily. Like, or something will bleed into the next. Like, I'll be like, oh, my back hurts, you know, I'm having a flare up. And then it turns into, oh, my back probably hurts because I've been binding for 2 years and I also have large chest lumps. And then it goes into like, so then I'm dysphoric and I'm also having all this internalized ableism. Like, why can't my back be good? Like, so it's like this thing. And then I also like have a lot of like dysphoria that stems from internalized ableism, if that makes sense. Because like, to pass as male, sometimes I have all this like weird gender role stuff and I'm like, oh, I can't pass as male if I'm like in a wheelchair and if like people think that I'm like weak, you know? And like there's the part of me that's like, that's crap. But there's also the part of me that has so much of this just ingrained in my head where I just feel like I should not exist, that I am a freak of nature in multiple ways. But really, writing thing, pretty much everything Bree said, and like, definitely like research and stuff, like, cause like we've been like saying there's a lot of ways for different people to transition, and like, because there's definitely all these like stereotypes of trans people. Like, you probably already know. So it's like just kind of, like Bree said, focus on their like other stuff too, you know, like don't just make them into this pretty much caricature of transness. Like, interests, hobbies, work, friends, family, backstory is really important. And while their transness will play into their backstory, there's other stuff. Like, if I was in a novel, my backstory would be really fun to read, but also really sad. I'm not gonna go into that though, because we're gonna be happy today.
I don't experience like as strong of body dysphoria. I think I really love the social dysphoria, the whole you feel like you're playing, like, no, this really is who I am, and they're like, no, you don't get it, like you're not that. I definitely relate with that experience, and I just try to hang out with people who respect me fully, including my general identity. I don't think that I'm lying to them or trying to trick them, or that I'm like mentally, that I need to get like some type of help because of how I identify. As for characters in books, I do have lots of feels about this. I am working on like a children's book series right now, and so specifically about a non-binary child who rides a dragon so far as things. And anyway, but I actually feel like I think the transition stories are really important, and I think you should definitely like read a lot of transition stories if you want to cover a transition story. But I also think that they get kind of tiresome, like we always focus on transition stories, and I kind of am interested in seeing more trans characters who just happen to be trans. Like, I think you should develop a character and then be like, oh, by the way, this dude you've been learning about is actually a trans dude, and it's not really a big deal, you know, you just casually mention it in some way. Or it maybe has to be kind of an overt way, because some audiences might not really understand, like, why is this dude wearing a binder if they might not understand that. But I just think that at the end, that we should, that writers and should consider creating characters that are trans that aren't necessarily in the middle of transition, and that the transness actually isn't necessarily a huge part of the story. and maybe I'll mention even briefly in the story. I think there's some value to just seeing normal trans people.
And one final note for me before, you know, we can either pass back to Karen or go on to the next question. Please, 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 please stop the trans victim narrative. If I want to read a story about a trans person who either kills himself or gets killed, I would read the newspaper. But we need more stories about this trans people who happen to just be regular people and live a normal life and have a good time. Because if the only thing that I ever, growing up, the only trans representation I ever saw was Silence of the Lambs in Buffalo Bill. So I grew up thinking that all trans people were literally fetishist murderers. So we need more stories about trans people living their life. I don't know, a romantic comedy about trans people, that could be cool as long as it doesn't have Adam Sandler. Maybe like, the trans woman who happens to like be a programmer, or like a sci-fi novel about the astronaut who is non-binary. Anything but more trans people getting murdered or killing themselves. Just,
In respect to what you just said, I'd like to mention my own experience with a trans MTF. I knew him initially as a gay man, and 10 years later, I was at a reception at the University of Southern California, and this woman came up to me and shook my hand and said, "Do you recognize me?" And I said, "Well, I'm bad with names, but you seem familiar." Well, she was the fellow I had known 10 years earlier. And she was successfully working as an archivist in the Gay and Lesbian Center library of the San Francisco Public Library. She had married legally an MTF before California allowed marriage, because under it was a marriage between a biological male and a biological female, no matter how the state chose to define it. And I asked, you know, how their lives together were going, and she said, "Well, I'm a soccer mom, and he's a he's a Dallas football fan, and that's how we get along." And it was a totally successful, and they were raising children at the time, totally successful MTF and FTM marriage.
Yes, please, more of that. That's really adorable. I love it.
So I was just wondering, I know that society has gotten more accepting of people who are in the LGBTQ spectrum, although it seems like it's really focusing more on the LMG, and the others are kind of afterthoughts in a lot of ways. I'm wondering, how much do you still have difficulty, and like, I know you mentioned a little bit already, but how much are there still problems in society, and specifically, what can we really do to try to help for those who do support? How can we act, and what can we do? And also, is there anything especially difficult with being, you know, transgender in the Mormon community, especially with things like the Proclamation of the Family and its interesting statements?
So in terms of difficulties related to the rest of the queer community, so it's hard to say, it would be very long for me to explain exactly. I guess you could say the trans rights are about 20 years behind gay rights. I guess the best way is just to say this. California recently recently passed a bill making it illegal to use as a murder defense the fact that you found out that the person you were on a date with was trans. No other state has that. In terms of the church, some people say that's worse than being gay because it's obviously defining your eternal gender. Some people think it's fine because eternal gender is eternal, and there's no better testimony of that than your imperfect body knowing what your eternal gender is. It depends on the person.
There are so many thoughts on this. I'm gonna pass this to Nadia while I gather them.
Yeah. So ways that people can be supportive
I think trans humor, there's a lot of transphobic jokes that people use, and I think it's important that if you are a cis ally, we call cisgender people who identify as the gender they're assigned at birth. And so if you are a cis ally of trans people, I think it's important to call out trans humor, because this transphobic humor like dehumanizes trans people by making us like the butt of a joke, because the butt of a joke is something that you can beat up, harass, and everything else. And so there is actual violence that's being practiced, and it's hard to know exactly how to stop that except from taking it seriously. And bathrooms sound like a little thing, but they're a big thing. There are trans people with urinary tract infections who just like will not leave the house because they're scared to go to the bathroom, and the bathroom can be a very scary place for a lot of trans people, and other gender non-conforming people even are people who maybe to come off as if they are a different gender than their side. And so, yeah, I think that there's certain political issues that are really important. And I'm sure that Karen probably have more to say.
Okay, so what I did think of was, we focused in a lot on marriage equality, and I had to defend a lot of people when the SCOTUS really passed, because they were like, okay, you're done, you know, just stop complaining about anything. And a lot of people actually messaged me, mostly people from Texas who are not close to me at all anyway, were like, why is it a big deal? You can get married to whoever you want, it isn't the point. And I'm like, amen. Yeah, like, there's so many issues, like Bree said, trans women, I think the statistic right now is that trans men have a 1 in 12 chance of being murdered, and trans women of color have a 1 in 8 chance of being murdered. I don't know the statistics on trans masculine people, because, like, it is definitely disproportionately weighted where trans women are being killed, you know. And, like, trans people, a lot of, like, us aren't even, like, directly killed, like, it's stuff like abuse and, you know, like, transphobia and feeling like we can't come out that leads us to, like, feeling suicidal and all of. There was earlier, I think this year, there was this series almost of young trans kids committing suicide, and a lot of them were nearing 18, and it was just like, if we could just do something, because I know how it is to be 17 and think 18 is 3 months away, but that's too far, I can't do this. But it's like, if we can just make that easier and make it so that there's resources to where trans kids aren't just like waiting and chomping at the bit for their 18th birthday to leave abusive homes, you know? So trans kids aren't like ending up homeless, like turning to like, when I was homeless, I knew a few trans people who were selling drugs and doing sex work to support themselves and get like hotel rooms for the night, because the shelter we were in was fine, but also like very, I remember one night we were all waiting outside for emergency beds because you had to sign in a certain number of nights to get a full-time bed. And they were like, okay, we have 2 female beds and 1 male bed. This guy turns to me and goes, well, you could get the female bed. And I'm like, and then because there's like maybe 8 of us outside, and everyone's just like looking at me like, are you a girl or a guy? And it just there's also the importance of youth shelters for like youth in general, but especially queer youth and especially trans youth, because adult shelters, even when you're a legal adult, are terrifying, especially when you're very early in transition. And even when you're just in general, it's like, bad stuff happened at a shelter in San Francisco, as always.
I just have one more thing I wanted to say as I started to really think about it and listening here. And, I think during this, when the SCOTUS decision came out, a lot of trans people were celebrating, but a lot of trans people weren't celebrating. And one of the reasons why is right before the SCOTUS decision came out, Obama was giving a speech. Just a general private speech where he was just going to say like how much advancement we've had in LGBT issues. And a trans woman who's an undocumented immigrant, started shouting about the detention centers where undocumented immigrants are forced to go to, and how trans women were getting raped frequently, and that she through her organization has found some trans women are being raped because the female trans women were being placed in male detention centers. That they were being raped by even the guards there. They're being taken advantage of for being undocumented. And I feel like a big part of the trans battle isn't really just like the level where Caitlyn Jenner is at, who actually has money and influence and is white and is a citizen. But also like we need reform, we need jail reform. There is no trans woman who's gone to prison who's not been raped multiple times. And so there needs to be prison reform, and there needs to be reform in the way we handle welfare and homelessness. Trans women are at a very high, there's a very high percentage that work in sex work, specifically for survival. Employment is a big deal, because when you're not employed, you lose your housing, which, by the way, family-friendly housing is good for no trans allowed, but you lose your housing. And so when you lose your housing, you end up having more risks of sexual assault on the street. So I think that's really a major issue for trans people.
One final note for me, as an addendum to that, there is a term in the community called being arrested for walking while trans. That's the term for if you are walking, usually at night, sometimes in the day, and you happen to be trans, and a police officer stops you and searches your bag, and if he finds anything that he could tie in some way to having sex of any kind, he will arrest you for sex work and put you in jail. That's the fact that it's common enough that there's a term for that is proof that there's a problem.
One more thing that I can't believe I didn't acknowledge before. Trans people face like pretty much the highest rates of substance abuse within the queer community. Like, there's already the corporate alcoholism of the queer community, and with Pride, there's booze everywhere. And like I know that, I don't know a lot about the Provo Pride scene, but I know that when I talked to someone about it, they were like, oh, well, you could come to City Limits, and I'm like, I'm not 21, and I'm also trying to be sober. And like, a lot of us will end up in like this place where we feel like what we use to like deal with dysphoria, to deal with, you know, everything else. Like, I'm pretty sure I read this thing that it was generalized between gay and transgender people, but it was still a good article and a good study. And I think it was like there's a gay and transgender people abuse substances, especially alcohol, at like a twice the rate of cis heterosexual people, and a lot of us will smoke, and that it was saying that gay men, I don't know if it was honestly probably more catering to like cis gay men in that regard, but like still have a higher rate of using injected drugs, like opiates and stuff. And yeah, it's just like this huge problem. And then there's stuff like, it can be really hard to get substance abuse treatment when you're trans. Because every time I go to the hospital for something, they focus in on mental illness. And then they're like, do you think that your transness is a delusion since you have psychotic tendencies? And I'm like, no. But thanks for pathologizing that. Like, until literally last year, the DSM-4 listed gender identity disorder, and it's been changed in the DSM-5 to gender dysphoria. The DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, pretty much the Bible of the psychiatric field. And I remember seeing the endocrinologist in the military, well, they were moving into the DSM-5 later than the rest of the country because military doctors just... and he was like, so I diagnosed you with gender identity disorder, and I was like, it's gender dysphoria now. And he's like, well, I don't think that's really valid anyway. I just don't like to think about the DSM-5. And I'm like, I'm seeing the wrong person. He took me off my hormones saying that, well, what we want to do is we want to block your ovaries' production of estrogen, so we're going to put you on Lupron for a while instead. But the thing is, at that point I had got testosterone for about 5-6 months. My ovaries weren't doing anything anymore. They were just sitting there. So I didn't need the Lupron, but yeah.
Sorry, one more thing, maybe we move to happy things, or maybe not, it depends on the next question here, but I was just thinking about the subtle things this allies can do besides support programs that help underprivileged, especially privileged trans people in prison and on the street, and in detention centers. I was thinking that you can just respect our gender, and just, you on some level, you can kind of treat us like you treat cis people, like it doesn't have to be a big deal that we're trans, like that's really helpful. Those little subtle things, those are really helpful. And like, if you wouldn't say it to a cis person, don't say it to a trans person. Like, you wouldn't, I guess you could if you really want to, but it's kind of tacky to like walk up to a trans person and be like, how do you know your gender anymore? Because you don't really do that with other people, like, you know? Like, so, I mean, maybe you can do it with people really, really close friends, maybe, but just try to be respectful. That's a good start, at least.
Prophet says, is it? I'm just gonna throw it out there that unless you're planning on getting naked with someone, their genitals are relevant to you.
Yeah. Thank you. This is for education purposes. I have two questions. The first has to do with church stances. And maybe one of you or some of you were interviewed in Payne's article. Two of the people said they were accepted by their wards, but that I was shocked to find out the church had official stances. As I recall, something like if you transitioned to male, you couldn't hold a priesthood, you couldn't. I wasn't sure, but I was shocked. I didn't know the church actually had any stances. So if you're aware of the LDS church's stances, etc., the only thing I've ever heard with Delano was saying we don't know much about that. But then they seem to have these official pre-discriminatory policies. The second question, I don't know how to word this, was there are thousands of sex assignments, usually very early in the child's life. And I know, I'm a therapist, I remember seeing a patient who when he was young, or he, she, couldn't, they didn't know what sex, so they built a penis, he became a male, and then when he started in puberty, he started growing breasts, and of course he was very confused. And so in the transgender community, where are those people? Because that seems to, it seems like gender is a lot more fluid than we thought it was. And there's different things, and there are a lot of people that get sex assignments, you know, within the first 3 months of life because they have both sexual genitalias or something. Where do they fall in this? Does that make sense as a question?
Where intersex fall?
Yes.
Yeah, the term is intersex. And there are so many ways to be intersex. People are saying that PCOS, if you choose to self-identify as intersex, you have that right. Like that's just an example. There's chromosomal differences, there's genitalia differences, there's differences in gonads, there's differences in hormones, and like the concept of a biological sex is completely fallacious. It doesn't exist. Male and female are just like, is anybody really perfectly, as far as science likes to define it, male or female? Like, because there's so many variations. I found out when I came out as trans to my dad that when I was born, they were like, we don't know if this is a penis or a clitoris. I mean, and being Mormon, I never knew anything about that. Nobody ever tells you what your genitalia are or what they do. So I just assumed that everybody had a penis of a different size. So one day when I was in like kindergarten, me and some of my friends who were all cis boys went and hid behind like this thing in the structure in the playground, and we all like pulled our pants down and we're like, we're gonna see who can pee the farthest. So we get to me and it just trickles down my legs kind of, and I'm like, they're like, well, first of all, they're like, why is your weenie so tiny? And I'm like, I don't know why you're so big. And like, nobody ever tells you any of that. And like, I honestly was just waiting for mine to get bigger and for my voice to get deeper, but my voice got deeper when I hit puberty, which made my mom really distressed because it didn't deepen a significant amount. But like, and I was actually talking to my partner about, there's this thing called vocal fry. There's also like up talking, where like you kind of lilt at the end and like you like raise your voice. And a lot of like girls will talk that way because like, and a lot of girls will also, it's really interesting, you should look into it. But like, I started up talking because people were always like, you sound like a boy and it's unattractive to guys. And I was like, well, okay. Kind of sound like, and it's so weird, like going from like trying really hard to be seen as a girl to trying really hard to not be seen as a girl. Like that's, I look at it and I'm just like, how did I go from one extreme to the other? But I mean, like, I think the whole thing is that like, a lot of trans people will like overcompensate with like interests, you know, traits of the gender they were assigned, so that people will like not like it can be like a lot of number of reasons. It can be like you don't want to be pretty cool, that you don't want to be outed, that you feel like maybe if you do this, you can be normal, and it's like. But yeah, basically, like, there's intersex people who are like, if you identify as the gender you were given, assigned at birth, and it's the same with intersex people, because there's trans intersex people like myself, and there's cis intersex people. It's literally the same thing, it's just that there's a difference in, like, I guess you could say biology.
Karen said about intersex people, I'm just going to, you know, let that sit because that was basically everything I could have ever said about that. The first thing about the church's official stance about it is that if I've learned anything kind of through this journey, is that never be surprised if the church has a stance on something. You'd be surprised. They even had a New Era article once telling you not to drink Red Bull, which is they consider that an official stance. So, with that in mind, the official church handbook of instructions states that if a member, it's very vague actually, it states that if a member receives elective transsexual operation, then they may be subject to losing the priesthood if they were previously priesthood holder, they will lose the temple recommend, they may be subject to disciplinary action up to and including excommunication. If an individual is already transgender and had a quote-unquote elective transsexual operation and they were not member previously and they're looking to get baptized, they may get baptized with written permission from the First Presidency. Which is interesting that they use the same thing, the same requirements to get baptized as a trans person as the same requirements to get baptized as a sex offender. But I'm not going to make any assumptions about what they think about trans people from that. And,
what is the theological reason? I mean, it's shocking.
Honestly, I don't know. There is a lot of official church policy and not a lot of doctrine to back it up. That's why I feel perfectly confident in my identity as a trans woman, because, I mean, maybe someone can find some new revelation about it, or some Bible verse that no one's ever heard of, but I've done a lot of research. I found nothing in the Book of Mormon, Pearl of Great Price, Doctrine and Covenants, or the Bible specifically saying that trans people are bad. Now, there are a lot of verses implying that trans people are okay. For example, in the New Testament, Jesus has a brief mention about how there are men who are made eunuchs and men who are born eunuchs, which some people talk about as them being gay, other people interpret that as guys who just can't have babies, and some people interpret that as trans people who are just born to not have kids. There's a lot of things that are very, very vague, but nothing specifically going against trans people in the doctrine, which is why it's so frustrating to me that the official church policy is very much against trans people. Also, there's an extremely vague wording in the Church Handbook of Instruction, which really leads it down to what I like to call Bishop Roulette, which is, for example, I dated the guy I was. He was trans, female, male trans, and his bishop was fine with him being trans. The state president, at first, had a little trouble, and then was fine, and he's a member in good standing. He has a temple recommend. He doesn't go to the temple because you have to baptize for women, which you feel comfortable with. But he's even had surgery and everything like that. Well, he's had top surgery, which could be considered quote unquote the elective transsexual operation, which in my case is kind of like saying you have an elective pacemaker, but that's beside the point. And then there's people like me. When I came out to my bishop, I was told that I had a bad influence from my gay friends making me feel this way, but the feelings will never go away, so I need to learn to cope with them and try to minimize them. Because if I ever actually came out and transitioned, this is the quote, my misery would be made fourfold in the afterlife. I wasn't aware that there was a Mormon conception of hell for trans people, but apparently, according to my bishop, there was. Meanwhile, my sequel's ward bishop, when I told him that I was trans, his only question was, well, are you acting on it? And I said, well, I'm here in a skirt and a blouse, so what do you think? And he said, well, are you living with your boyfriend? I'm like, no. And he was like, well, that's not a problem then. So it really comes down to the bishop and the state president. So people Boyd K. Packer had a lot of thoughts about this, but Boyd K. Packer also had a lot of thoughts about how women shouldn't be doing the same thing that men do because it will intimidate them. And also there's the whole, you know, Miracle Forgiveness book, which was written about how women shouldn't be in the workplace because then they'll inevitably have an affair. So I don't tend to trust the source of just an apostle saying things as like straight up church doctrine. Maybe that makes me an apostate, but I guess I'm in good company if that makes me one.
So, but there are official stances.
There are official policies with, in my opinion, no doctrine to back them up.
We've got about 4 minutes left,
so
maybe we
move on
to the last question.
Oh, I was just going to say really quickly, I do think though for non-binary people there is a doctrinal implication, like in the temple there is male and female separations. And there's male-female separation within church. There is a clear, like theological implication that if there are two categories of genders, are male and female, and there are no other genders. So.
Thank you. This is a great presentation. I am a psychologist practicing in Calgary, Alberta, and through word of mouth, I have worked with both Mormon as well as non-Mormon families who have come with a child, as the youngest one was 9 years old. So children and early adolescent, and who want to transition. And I found it a struggle to support. So the parents want to be supportive. The parents are supportive. They want to be supportive, but they say that he or she is a child. How? Can we wait? So as a psychologist, how do you support the parent, and how do you support also the child? Yes, it's just kind of wanted to get some understanding. What, from personal experiences, what would have been the best thing for you?
If things have gone in a way that I deem correctly, I would have been able to be a puberty blockers, hormone blockers at puberty. I would have been able to make me start hormones at like 16, but I doubt it in Texas. I would have been able to like save for top surgery and everything. Ideally, there would never have been a ban on trans people in the military, and TRICARE would cover my transition. But TRICARE doesn't cover, but it might now. But it's going to be a while.
So the official standards of care for transgender people says that it talks mostly about adults, so there's a section talking about for transgender children. Typically, if someone is having an issue with their gender identity, they may be transgender, the most recommended course of action is that they need to go on puberty blockers as soon as they can, like once it seems like puberty is about to happen. And then the standard best practice is that when the child turns 16, if they still identify as their gender that they identified as, then they may begin hormonal treatment. Of course, during this time, they'll want to see a therapist that is licensed to deal with transgender, or has experience dealing with transgender issues and licensed to deal with transgender issues. So the age of starting hormones is 16 before they would want to start puberty blockers to give the child, both the child and the parents, time. The child, so that they don't have to deal with, honestly, it's how they go through puberty as the wrong gender. It saves the child from that, and then it gives both the parent and child time to determine if this is something that they are feeling, and to give the parents time to deal and reflect on it. And then once they are 18, then they are then qualified to be able to have surgery to kind of reaffirm their gender, as long as they have a letter from two different therapists and a medical doctor giving them the go-ahead. So basically, if you have parents who have trans children, get them to an endocrinologist, give them like a letter to bring to the endocrinologist saying this child is transgender, so that they can get on puberty blockers as soon as possible, because I can say from first-hand experience that not having that is awful.
I just want to add, is that still being supportive for the child? And also, I had read a statistic, and it was saying that 25% of children end up identifying as trans, later on change only 25% of children end up identifying as trans actually do continue with as being trans what once they become adults. So how do you get them?
So that study came from an institute in Sweden or Scandinavia, one of those two S countries. That was a clinic for gender non-conforming children starting from the age of 3 onward. The way that they got that statistic, that 80% of children who had a very early age will no longer identify as trans, is because when the child stopped going to the clinic, then they consider that as them no longer identifying as trans, which ignores the very complex reality. They could move, they could lose their house, they could have a different job that has insurance that doesn't cover it. There's a lot of things that go into that, which is also why it's good to have the purity blockers to give them time to think about it, because generally, by the time you're 16, while you don't have the world figured out, you at least have large parts of yourself figured out, and so that gives everyone time to kind of adjust and wait and see what happens.
I just wanted to add one thing, this is a little heavy, but one thing that I did say to my mom, she asked me, if I could have put you on purity blockers, would you have wanted them? And I said, yeah, because, you know, wouldn't you rather have a kid who wasn't going to puberty than have a dead kid? Because I tried so many times to hurt myself.
I also think it's important to mention that with that study, it was complicated too because some of the factors to identify if the child was trans wasn't even identity-based. Some of it had to do with if they were like wearing clothes that they felt didn't belong to their gender and things like that that didn't necessarily reflect gender identity. So that really kind of is different than a child saying, I am this gender. So I just want to add that. I also want to add this idea just to end off, like, this might sound radical and everything, but cis people can get kind of weird for me, and sometimes I just don't understand why you want to tell people the genitals of your kids. So consider gender-neutral parenting. I do think it's healthy for everyone else if you just let your child decide what gender they are and make it identity-based. I know it might sound radical for some people.